Kia ora talofa, and welcome to another episode of Playmakers, where each week we catch up with some of our past and present superstars. This week, I've got the pleasure of catching up with Wellington, Hurricanes and All Black superstar, most recently, the Western Force, Jeremy Thrush. Thrushy, welcome to the show, mate, and thanks for coming on. How are you? Are you keeping safe over there in lockdown?
Yeah, we are. We're only here for 4 days. It's not too bad compared to the rest of Australia at the moment. I think most of them have got about 2 weeks in lockdown. So hopefully that's it. 4 days, we can get back out.
Mate, I was going to start with that dirty slug of yours and the mullet, but I've noticed you've actually chopped it off. But we'll go there. I mean, what brought that about in terms of getting that on board?
It would have been last year, actually, in lockdown. We were in for about maybe 6 odd weeks. I grew a beard and I was getting on a bit in age, so there's a fair few silvers coming through. And my wife wanted me to shave it off, so I shaved the mullet and she didn't like it too much, so I held on to it for a little while. And then the mullet sort of took shape this year. It's sort of something all the young guys are doing over here in Aussie, so I thought I'd jump on board and try to keep my youth. I think it worked a little bit.
I was going to say, mate, I thought that you'd fit right in there. There's a few bogans over there that were taking you on as one of their own, weren't they?
Yeah, definitely the mullet, not so much the moustache. Didn't get a lot of good comments from the moustache from most people, but the mullet, I definitely fitted in with the mullet.
Mate, I want to start. I mean, obviously you're in Perth and you're with the Western Force, but you rolled the dice a little bit in 2018. They'd just been, you know, obviously kicked out of Super Rugby, and there was talk of you going to Northampton or possibly to France. What sort of made the decision to go to a place that wasn't going to be playing first class rugby?
Yeah, it was. I guess it was kind of stepping into the unknown a little bit with, I guess, who was still here from the Force and what kind of competition and experience that was going to take place with the rugby. I kind of braced myself for that sort of situation and what was going to be ahead. But I was actually pretty surprised with how everything kind of went, and really enjoyed myself for the first 2 and a bit years here with the competition, what the Force were trying to do and what Andrew Forrest and Nicola, his wife, were trying to do with the competition of global rugby.
Mate, you've been to a lot of places as well, you know, in your rugby career, you know, South Africa, obviously, I mean, we played for Gloucester and over in the UK, but, you know, playing against, you know, teams in Malaysia and South China and obviously being able to experience that, how different was that in terms of your, I suppose, whole preparation and also the players that you were playing against?
Yeah, it was experience. I unfortunately didn't get to go to the Singapore game. I picked up an injury, but we had some good trips. The boys went to Tonga and played Tonga before they went away to the World Cup. And that was an experience for the boys. I think a fair few of them got a bit of food poisoning and some sort of stomach bug on the way over and then on the way back. And it pissed down the whole time they were there in the game. So it was a bit of a tricky situation with the field being pretty flooded. We had one game in Singapore that the humidity was, I don't know, it was outrageous, but a couple of the boys passed out and catched the drum before the game because of the heat. So there were a fair few experiences that, yeah, I hadn't come across before. But you look back now and talk to the lads that are still here from those times, they're pretty funny stories. You have to say we've come a long way since those days, which is pretty cool.
I'll tell you what, yeah, you certainly have. And I suppose, you know, when you've gone through all that and then being, you know, reintroduced back into, you know, to Super Rugby AU first and foremost, and then, you know, the Trans-Tasman. I mean, how awesome was that to be able to do that? What sort of celebrations did you guys, you know, get into in terms of, you know, being, I suppose, you shunted out in one stage, but then being brought back?
Yeah, it was weird. I guess we had about 6 weeks of probably not as intense lockdown as the Kiwis did, but we just kept hearing rumours that were last year that we're probably going to come back into some sort of Super Australian competition, Super Rugby Australian competition, and then when it came about, I guess from my point of view, there was a little bit of anxiety and seeing if I was capable of running around and catching some of these young fellas. And then it just sort of built and built within us that those guys that had stuck around that had been kicked out and stayed and wanted to make the Force a pretty strong team in Australia again. And I guess they got the opportunity to do that last year, and then going ahead again this year, we've just, I guess, taken a step forward with getting a fair few more wins and pushing some of the Kiwi teams a bit further than they probably expected us to.
Oh, mate, you certainly did. But from the outside, it looked like you had a real, you know, awesome team culture, great team culture. Guys were getting along, and which is always kind of tough considering what you just spoken about. Guys from different parts of the world are sort of seen as a made-up team. But you went in there and you had songs in the changing room. We've all seen it, the Aerosmiths and the Adeles and stuff like that. And sometimes Kiwis go to a different place and they try to bring that sort of, you know, that sing-along sort of aspect to it, and all of a sudden there's a big flop. That wasn't the case for you guys. You guys, you really built it. I mean, how did that come across, and especially for the Aussie guys?
Yeah, well, it was actually Marcel Brachy who came up. Like, we had a team song, and then he decided at the end of like the bit where, you know, our team song, we're going to sing a couple of belters that most boys know, and the first one was Adele, Someone Like You, and everyone was kind of like a little bit unsure of how that was going to go at the end. It was, I guess, you normally doing a rah-rah, like a bit of a chant song. A few beers in the change room and arm in arm, and we got into it. It was awesome. We didn't realise it was going to take off like it did on social media.
Well, mate, it doesn't help when you've got someone like Richard Cowie and his budgie smugglers, mate, singing right at the top of his tone, mate, hey?
Honestly, that's all he brought with him, suitcase of budgie smugglers, I reckon. I haven't seen him wearing too much else.
Nice. Mate, I want to go back to your younger days and, you know, obviously play for New Zealand. You're under 19s, you're out of Hutt Valley High School. You won, you know, the World Player of the Year back then. I mean, that's when guys like, you know, Kieran Reid was obviously part of your squad. But you celebrated pretty hard, I hear, in the old in the aftermatch after you'd won the final with the old South African boys. Tell us a bit about that and being on the Terps with the lads.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to get a shouted a ticket to the IRB Awards. It was London, so they paid for my flight over there, put us up in a nice hotel, and obviously got to win the award, which was a pretty awesome achievement. And then one of the other Kiwi boys also was up for the same award, and we just started to celebrate and ended up at the hotel foyer with the South African national team. They just won the IRB Team of the Year, I think.
Oh.
So they were all in there and on the beers and at the bar. And I think Mikaeli, who was up for the award with us, got on the piano and started singing and playing some songs, and everyone just started to kick on. And then there was about 10 of the South African boys decided to take it back up to one of their rooms. And there was just remembering trays of Heineken being brought in. It was kind of one of those moments where, as a young fella, you step back and you're with a few of the guys that you've you know, watched growing up, like a Victor Matfield and a Bucky Botha and Sean Griffiths, and sort of players like that are out there. And they start wrestling each other in the room. These are huge, huge men going at it. So you kind of take a step back and think, geez, what am I doing here? But we just kind of kicked on and enjoyed the night and the festivities. It was a pretty cool experience.
Oh, mate, that sounds so good, man. I mean, a few years later, you would step into that scene yourself, making your debut, you know, for the All Blacks in 2013. You're obviously on the bench, and I mean, how was that for you? And sort of, You know, did your parents, you know, come to the game, and you know, how did you tell them, you know, first and foremost that, you know, you've been named in the All Blacks squad, but now you have got an opportunity to come off the bench in that first game?
Yeah, it was a bit of a whirlwind whole week, really. The first week in camp, I was 28 years old when I made the team, so you know, it had been a fair bit of years of hard work in New Zealand rugby for a long time. So I guess I got in there and was a little bit anxious and you know, walking around trying not to stuff anything up, or put your best foot forward. And I guess that week was a little bit nerve-wracking for me. We played France at Eden Park, and my brother came over from Melbourne for the game. My mum and dad were there, and my sister was there. And then, unfortunately, I didn't get on. It must have been a close game, and obviously Steve and the coach must have realised that I was probably a little bit nervous and maybe not ready to get on at this stage of the game. It was a little bit tight, so I didn't actually get on that week, but I felt pretty bad for my brother. He'd flown all the way from Melbourne for the game, and then went to Christchurch the week after and got about 15-20 minutes off the bench then, and it was an unreal feeling to get down there. My mum and dad came to that one as well, which is pretty good.
And I hear that first game, even though you didn't get on, you stitched up your wife a bit too. She also came to the game at Eden Park.
No, that was the Christchurch game. So I was we were dating back then, and she'd never met the parents. And then I thought,
she'd never met your parents?
Nah, and then I asked if she wanted to come down to the Christchurch game, and she sat down next to mum and dad for the game, first time they met her. So I don't know what mum was happier about, me playing for the All Blacks or getting to meet my girlfriend for the first time. So, it's a pretty funny story of how my wife got to meet my mum and dad.
Oh, mate, that's
a heck of... stuck with me, so...
That's the one. That's the way to test them, mate. That's the way to test them. Good on you. But you also had a method of remembering the line-out calls. I mean, tell us a little bit about that, man.
Yeah. Well, obviously, through the Hurricanes, I'd always been the one calling the line-out. So you kind of run through your head before everyone else. So you're always switched on and know what's going on. And in the ABs, I didn't call the line-outs for them. So it was a bit of a stressful time the first game, and so I wrapped my wrist with white tape and wrote them down. But by the time I was about to get on, I'd pretty smeared and runny, so I had a bit of anxiety and panic attack about not knowing what the calls were going into that. So the plan didn't work too well, but I got through it all right, so it was okay.
Oh, awesome. You love to keep guys on their toes, and I think James Parsons had mentioned, you talked about the All Black environment, how daunting that can be, and but also, you know, how fantastic it can be as well. But he mentioned the story that you'd taught him the wrong haka. So you'd sat there teaching him the wrong haka, then he went over and tried to replicate that haka that you'd spoken to him about and taught him to Liam Messam, and apparently Liam almost dropped him, that he was just going, "What the heck is that crap?" I mean, have you got any other stories?
I'm not sure. Me and Chipper were rooming together in Scotland, and obviously I could sense he was a little bit anxious about the whole thing, and I obviously knew I'd been there myself a few years earlier about, you know, not wanting to stuff up. But I don't know if I actually did teach him the wrong haka, or if that's just what I thought the haka was, and I taught him the actions and the words, and I just thought I was doing the right thing, and maybe my words and actions weren't right.
After that, then, mate, you've gone over to Gloucester. I mean, you've a big decision to be able to go on the. I mean, how was that for the family? Because it's not like New Zealand, is it? In Gloucester's feel, it's a workingman's town with what's going on, fairly quiet. So, was it hard to adapt?
It was. I think the first 6 months was pretty tricky, and not from a living lifestyle thing for me personally, but just the way the game's played over there.
Yeah.
I'm not like a big tractor, Northern Hemisphere tight headlock that they kind of have in those areas of the world. But I like to use my support play and a bit of a skill set to play the game, and that's how I feel like I get into games and get my confidence going forward into a game. And there wasn't a lot of that at the start at Gloucester and the way we played, so it took a little while to figure out how I can kind of build confidence in my game and start to feel like I'm actually contributing a bit more. So that took me about 6 months to get around, but then once I got that and figured out the way, you know, they play the game in the Northern Hemisphere, we really enjoyed it and loved our time at Gloucester. And King's Home, the fields are pretty fantastic place to play. Great crowds, great atmosphere. And it is a working sort of city. You know, like all the spectators and fans, and a lot of their pay packet on getting a season pass or coming away for trips into Europe. So you feel like there's a fair bit of weight on your shoulders to perform, because these guys are putting a fair bit of their money into coming to support us and you know, encouraging us to win games. So, but I guess that's a pretty cool experience in itself.
I mean, I suppose it would have been tough as well. You just had an outstanding season with the Hurricanes. I think, you know, when you got to the final, you're about 13 points ahead of everyone else. You'd already signed to go over to Gloucester, and you know, obviously you didn't win the final, and the Highlanders pipped you there. But did you feel like reconsidering going over after the final?
Not really. Like, I signed the Christmas before that season had started, or just after Christmas. So I kind of accepted what was happening and was kind of already had made the plans and was ready to move on sort of after that. It was tough, I'd say, in the last week or so, watching the Blues play the Highlanders in the Trans-Tasman competition. Yeah. They brought up the Dixon try a fair few times.
Was it a try, mate? Was it a try?
Of course I'm not going to say it was a try. So that was a bit tough to watch. But, we had our opportunity to win it in 2015, and unfortunately we didn't take it. But it was very satisfying to see them get back there again the year after and win the title.
I mean, what happened that year in 2015? I mean, you guys just clicked. I mean, Chris Boyd, what was he like as a rugby coach? He just seems sort of straight up and down. Has he got a good sense of humour? What was he like to be coached under?
Yeah, I really enjoyed Boydy. I think he obviously had a really clear plan of what he wanted to do and game plan that suited the athletes we had in our team. He worked really well with his coaches. He brought Plum in. Yeah. They worked really well together. And Boydy was probably more of the casual kind of guy, and Plum brought more of the attitude and mindset with being the forwards and defence coach. So I guess just their mixture and what we had, and bringing Mar back and all that, just kind of helped build a fair bit of momentum for us to go on and play pretty well.
Another guy that you had plenty of time for as well, he obviously copped a lot of, flack and Hurricanes, you know, era, was Mark Hammett. And, you know, tell us about your time with him.
Yeah, I've got a hell of a lot of time for Hammer as a coach. He obviously copped a fair bit of flack with some of the decisions and choices he made with the team, but I honestly don't think, this is me personally, that we would have made the 2015 final or the 16th final without, all the work that he put in the squad that put in before we got to, I guess, have a few of those glory years. And then personally, just when he signed, I remember talking to him on the phone, and he was asking why I had been an All Black and all these things. And he said, you know, if I stay with the Hurricanes and keep playing, that he'll do everything he can to help push me and get me selected to be an All Black. And wow. I guess he was true to his word. He helped push my career in the right direction to have the opportunity to play in the black jersey.
Mate, that's so good. I mean, I want to touch on a couple more things because I know, you know, we haven't got much time left, but you've scored a few tries. You've already touched on the fact you like the open style play and you like to throw the ball around, get in support, but there's, you know, one try that comes to mind, and that's, you know, that's in Bloom. It's a heck of a place to go to when you're the travelling teammate in 2011. But you're down 47-43 and you score from about 40 metres, which I suppose by the time you end up in a couple more years, that'll turn into 50, then 60, then 70-odd metres, mate. How was that feeling to win the game with that last-minute try, mate? And how are the lungs?
I'll probably add Chip and Chase in there at some stage, as time goes on, but the lungs were gone. I think it must have been the last few minutes of the game, I think. But yeah, it was 40 metres out. I just remember getting the ball down the sideline, and I had a young Dane Coles inside me, and I knew he had a fair few wheels, so I honestly was trying to get the ball to him the whole time, but for some reason the guy that was defending the both of us kept thinking I was a bigger threat, so he kept trying to hold off on me, and every time I dummied, he just kept, we kept getting closer to the line, and then I just realised I was over the line, and slid in, and by the end of the year, my lungs are gone. I'm playing a block. Every time we used to play at Boom or play against the Cheetahs, the games are always really high scoring. So I was pretty buggered by the end of it.
Do you miss that style of play? Do you miss, you know, you've had a heck of a year, you know, and also I suppose your time at the Force and what you've done. But New Zealand rugby is a little bit different. The skill set's different. The mindset's different. I mean, do you often reflect back on, you know, your time in New Zealand and sort of the way the game's played, and do you miss it?
Yeah, you do a bit. I did miss a fair bit of it when I was in the UK at times. You know, just some weeks it could be a fairly big grind, and the way you play. But I think I'm just more grateful that I had the opportunity to play in New Zealand for so long and for a team I loved, and then being able to go overseas and play for a couple of different teams and understand how well, I guess, we've got it in New Zealand with the way we play and the mindset of everyone. I have to say, the way we want to play at the Force, and I know it probably didn't look like it at times, but we do want to play a pretty entertaining style of footy. I think the way we're going, and if we keep developing the skill sets of the young guys here, then I think we can get close to playing a pretty entertaining style of footy where we try to attack from anywhere.
Mate, awesome. One last question before I let you go, because I know there's some other stories I'd love to get out of you, but that's probably another time in Waihi Beach, mate. But You've been in Australia. You've been in Australia. You've seen it. Do you think they can get, you know, the Wallabies can get, and also their AU competition? In your opinion, do you reckon they can get to a level where the New Zealanders are and actually compete with them over the next, I suppose, couple of years before the Rugby World Cup?
I think so. I think it's still depth is a big thing that the Kiwi sides have over the Aussie teams. Just, you know, you saw in Super Rugby Trans-Tasman, it's a few of the Kiwi teams that about two or three or four frontline players got injured. But the guys that came in and stepped up, you know, like, they didn't really make too much of a difference to the team and the way they played. I think the depth in Australia at the moment is probably not as strong as it is in New Zealand. But I think the way the Aussie teams are trying to play is probably a different style. I think the Brumbies play a bit different to most. The Reds probably play a bit more like Kiwi teams. We want to try to play a little more like a Kiwi team. If we can keep developing some of these guys coming through in the next two or three years, I think, and having someone like Dave Rennie over here coaching the Wallabies, I think it will make a big difference.
Oh, awesome stuff, mate. Hey, thank you so much for your time. As I mentioned, I know you've got a lot of other stories that we perhaps off camera that we can talk about a bit later on. I want to congratulate you too, mate. You've had an outstanding season. Congratulate you also for another year under the force. And we look forward to seeing you back out there and also taking on the coaches' reins, mate. Perhaps it might not be a beard growth. You could be losing your hair, mate, with some of those coaches, right?
I hope not.
good on you, Thushy. Thanks a lot for your time. I really appreciate it, mate.
No, thank you. Cheers.
Well, there you have it. Another episode of Playmakers. We look forward to seeing you again sometime soon.